Tonight is January the 18th, and we are continuing with our creation class. Parshas Vayishlach, page 190. Last time we covered the story of Reuven and the episode with Bilhah, and we read the Psukim all the way to, we've actually read the rest of 190 and through 192. We read to the end of Perek Lamed Hey, the end of chapter 35. I'm going to read again on page 190, starting from Chaf Gimel, starting from verse 23. And we'll just do a little bit about this, and then we're going to go on to Esav's family. So, we read last time, Ayu b'nei Yaakov shneim asar, the children of Yaakov were 12. B'nei Leah b'chor Yaakov r'uvein v'shimon v'levi v'yehuda v'yisachar uzvulun. The children of Leah, the b'chor of Yaakov, the eldest was Reuven, and then Shimon Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, and Zebulun. So you have six. B'nei Rachel, Yosef, and Binyamin. Rachel has two, Yosef and Binyamin. B'nei Bilhah, Shivchas, Rachel, Dan, and Naphtali. The children of Leah, of Bilhah, the maid of Rachel, were Dan and Naphtali. B'nei Zilpah, Shivchas, Leah, God, and Asher. Then the children of Zilpah, the maid of Leah, God, and Asher. Eila, B'nei Yaakov, Asher, Yula, Lo, B'fadan, Aram. These are the children of Yaakov that were born to him in Padan Aram. And this is the first time that we have the children of Yaakov listed, all 12, because now that Binyamin is born, so now we can list all 12 sons of Yaakov together. We'll just ask everybody to get real cozy over here. Okay. So all 12 are listed. We mentioned last time that Reuven is mentioned specifically because of the episode with Bilhah, and the Torah wants to make it clear that Reuven's standing is still as one of the 12 tribes. Now, it does say that these are the sons of Yaakov that were born to him in Padan Aram. What is wrong with that statement?
Was Binyamin born?
Okay, Binyamin was not born in Padan Aram. Binyamin was born right outside Beis Lechem. So he was really born in Eretz Canaan, or at least very close to the main part of Eretz Canaan. So he was not born in Padan Aram. I saw one of the Mepharshim, one of the commentaries, wants to say that this is written as the bulk of the children, 11 of 12, were born in Padan Aram, even though Binyamin was not. But the main point here that's being made is that they were not born in the main part of Eretz Canaan. They were not born in Eretz Yisrael with Yitzchak. Vayavol Yaakov al Yitzchak aviv mamre ki yarasa arba. Yaakov came to Yitzchak, his father, to Mamre Kiryas Arba, who Chevron, which is Chevron, Asher Garsham Avraham Yitzchak, that Avraham Yitzchak and Yitzchak sojourned there. Vayu Yimei Yitzchak Me'as Shana Ushmonim Shana. Yitzchak's years were 180 years. Vayva Yitzchak Vayamas Vayayasat Alamav. And Yitzchak, like how they translate, expired and died and gathered into his nation. Zaken usvayamim, old and satisfied of days. Vayikberu oso Esav v'Yaakov banav, and he was buried by Esav and Yaakov his son. This is in stark contrast, as we mentioned before, to when Abraham was buried by Yitzchak and Yishmael. There, the Torah makes a point that he was buried by Yitzchak and Yishmael. Yitzchak's name is placed first, and that's one of the ways that we know that Yishmael had done teshuvah at the end of his life, because he put Yitzchak before him in the burial of Avraham. You see no such indication from Esav. It still says Esav and Yaakov, not Yaakov and Esav, even though Yaakov is the Bechor. Yaakov had purchased the Bechor from Esav. Yaakov is the Tzaddik. Esav is not willing to admit Yaakov's superiority, and he still puts himself, he forces himself to be first. So he's buried, Yitzchak is buried. Now, we're about to move on to Esav's family, and before we do that, one note, and that is that Yitzchak lived to be 180 years old. At this point, when Yaakov comes back to Eretz Canaan and meets up with his father Yitzchak, how old is Yaakov? Well, let's figure it out. He was 63 when he got the brachos, when he got the blessings. He then stayed in the yeshiva of Aver for 14 years. He hid in the yeshiva of Aver for 14 years. That's 77. Plus another 22 years of being away from his father. Total of 99. That's how old he is at this point. He is 99 years old. At this time when he's 99 years old, his father Yitzchak, who had been 60 when he was born, is 159. Which means that when Yaakov comes back to his father's house, his father Yitzchak still has another 21 years before he dies. So the Torah writes that Yitzchak died at 180. The Torah is fast-forwarding 21 years. But in fact, that's not what happened quite yet. Meaning that there's still a bunch of storyline that still has to happen in Parashas Vayeshev before Yitzchak's death. In fact, the entire Parashas Vayeshev, with Yosef and his dreams and being sold and becoming and then being bought by Potiphar, and the whole episode of Yosef and Potiphar's wife and Yosef being thrown in jail, and the dreams of the butler and the baker, and that whole episode, and Yehuda and Tamar, all that we're going to learn in Parashas Vayeshev, all of that takes place prior to the death of Yitzchak. We will show at the end of Parshas Vayeshev where Yitzchak actually dies, chronologically. We will also show an allusion to Yitzchak in Parshas Vayeshev. He's not mentioned by name, but he is mentioned with a pronoun referring to Yitzchak. And we'll show that when we get into Parshas Vayeshev. So the Torah here recording Yitzchak's death is because at this point, Yitzchak ceases to be a player. He's still living, and of course, as long as the tzaddik is alive, that is important. The tzaddik continues to do for the world, and is a big schos, it's a merit for everybody else. However, he ceases to be an overt player in the history of Klal Yisrael. At this point, really, the brothers, starting with Parashas Vayeshev, become the main event. Yaakov himself is also sidelined at this point, but since Yaakov still has somewhat of a role to play, therefore Yaakov's death is not recorded, and of course his death won't be recorded until Parshas Vayechi, after he gives those all-important brachos, the blessings, to the 12 tribes. So Yaakov's death isn't recorded till it actually happens chronologically, but Yitzchak's death is recorded here because Yitzchak is no longer on the scene. But we will see that he'll be hinted to later on when we get into Parshas Vayeshev. And it is significant at what point he dies. And we're going to show that where he died was pivotal in the storyline of Yosef and his brothers. But it's recorded here because, as I said, he won't be mentioned by name during his lifetime from here on in. Okay, so now we move on to Esav's family. Esav's family starts here on page 192 with Perek Lamed Vav, chapter 36. And as you see, it starts off, Ela told us Esav, who Edom, these are the generations of Esav. He is Edom. And Esav's family will be discussed until the end of Parashas Vayishlach. So the entire chapter 36, Perek Lamed Vav, it's got 43 psukim. We're going to have an overview of Esav and his children, his grandchildren, etc. Even the kings that would eventually rule in Edom, in the country that is Esav's country. After we finish that, then we'll go on to Parshas Vayeshev, which will be all about Yaakov's children. Rashi, in the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev, tells us that what the Torah is doing, the Torah has to tell us about Esav, and has to tell us about Yaakov. But Yaakov is far more important than Esav. And so the Torah runs through Esav's family over here. And for the next 43 psukim, we're going to get a quick overview of Esav's family. And then we'll dispense with that and move on to the main event, which is Yaakov's family. So we get a very quick rundown of Esav's family. However, there are some very important points that we need to make as we go through Esav's family. Now, it's going to be somewhat tedious because you have a lot of names. I'm going to try to spice it up a little bit by showing you some of the insights into the names. But we are going to be reading a lot of names. You have to bear with us because that's the Torah writes over here and we want to get through it.
Why would the Torah spend so many psukim on Esav's life and so few on Yitzchak's life if he's one of the avos and Esav's?
The Torah spent a lot of time on Yitzchak's life.
Not right, but not specifically on him.
You mean on Yitzchak himself?
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't spend a lot of time on Esav himself either. It's just going through his children. Yitzchak, we get a lot about his children.
Why are his children so important?
So we'll get to that in a moment. So your real question is, why isn't there a lot of stories about Yitzchak?
Right.
That, not in comparison to Esav. We don't have a lot of stories about Esav either.
Right. So that's
you just want to know a lot. So we covered this really when we dealt with Yitzchak.
Because he was a bridge, but...
Right.
So that was it.
Yeah. And his job was to be a bridge. And we, you know, okay. So I don't want to rehash that.
Fine.
But you're right. We don't have a lot of stories about Yitzchak's life, things that he did. Esav's children are important because Edom is the main... is the main antagonist to Yaakov. Our arch enemy is Edom. And so this is going to describe him to us a little bit. Now, I'm going to ask you to hold the place here on 192 and turn back to Parshas Toldos. On page 132. Page 132, towards the bottom of the page, Pasuk Lamed Dalet, verse 34. We read this when we did it. Vayhi Esav ben Arba'im Shana. Esav was 40 years old. Vayikach Isha es Yehudis Bas Be'eri Achiti. He took a wife, Yehudis, the daughter of Be'eri, who was a Chiti, that's the nation he was from. Bas Basmas Bas Elon Achiti. And Basmas, the daughter of Elon, who was also from the country of Chiti. Okay, and we know that those two women were they were a trouble for both Yitzchak and Rivka. So we have two wives here mentioned for Esav. We have Yehudis and Basmas. I'm going to ask you to hold this place on 132. I'm going to show you one other place at the end of Parashas Toldos. Page 142. After Yitzchak tells Yaakov to run away to Lavan and find a wife there, so Esav understood that the women of Canaan were not worthy in the eyes of his father Yitzchak. Vayelech, the last pasuk test, verse 9. Vayelech Esav el Yishmael. Esav went to Yishmael. Vayikach es mochalas bas Yishmael ben Avram. He takes as a wife Machalas, the daughter of Yishmael, the son of Avram, Achos Nevaios, the sister of Nevaios, Al Nashav, on top of his other two wives, Lo Liisha, for him for a wife. And then you have the three wives of Esav. We have Yehudis, we have Basmas, and we have Machalas. Those are his three wives. Yehudis, Basmas, and Machalas. What?
Why do we need to know the sister?
Achos Nevaios. I think she was the sister of Nevaios.
Son of Abraham, sister, yeah.
Yeah, so that's an excellent observation. Our sages, Chazal, point out this interesting thing, that her brother, Nevaios, is mentioned, and that's to teach us when Yishmael died. Yishmael died right before Machalas married Esav. And therefore, rather than her father giving her hand to Esav in marriage, it was her brother who did so. Why do we need to know when Esav died? Because when Yishmael died, we know Yishmael was 137 when he died. He was 137. We know that Yishmael was 14 years older than Yitzchak. We know, therefore, that Yitzchak at the time of Yishmael's death was 123. 137 minus 14 is 123. And we know that Yitzchak was 60 when Yaakov was born. That means at this point Yaakov is 63. That's how we know how old Yaakov was when he got the brachos. Before, when I went through the whole chronology of Yaakov's life, I started that he was 63 when he got the blessings. So how do we know he was 63? So that's what Mrs. Wittenberg is really pointing out. The way we know it is from over here. That's not why I wanted you to read this pasuk, but it's good to reiterate that. That's how we know is from this calculation. So that's why her brother's mentioned. What's that? Right, Nevaios is her brother. She's the sister of Nevaios. That's her brother's name. That's correct. Nevaios was Yishmael's oldest. It was his Bahar.
Say that one more time.
Nevaios was Yishmael's oldest son. we have, when Yishmael's children are listed, it says, Bechor Yishmael Nevayos. That's her oldest brother. So when her father died, he was the natural successor, and would therefore give her hand in marriage. So again, let me just, I have to mention these names again, because we're going to get confused with the names. It is confusing. Three wives for Esav: Yehudis, Basmas, and Machalas. Okay. Now, so that's, we have page 132 and page 142. Again, keep these places. We're going to have to keep coming back to them. Now turn to where we're up to on page 192, as we mention Esav's wives, but as we go through them, it's going to appear that these are different women. The Torah again says, starting with the beginning of Paraklam above chapter 36, Ve'ela told us Esav hu Edom, these are the children of Esav, he is Edom. Esav lokach es nashav mibinos Kenan, Esav took his wives from the daughters of Kenan, es Ada bas Elon hachiti, Ada, the daughter of Elon, who was a chiti, ves Ahalivama bas Ana bas Tzivon hachivi, and Ahalivama, the daughter of Ana, the daughter of Tzivon, who was a chivi, ves Basmas bas Yishmael achos Nevayos, and Basmas, the daughter of Yishmael, the sister of Nevayos. So this is exceedingly confusing. The names have changed. Where it used to be Yehudis, Basmas, and Machalas, here we have Ahalivama, Ada, and Basmas. So Basmas is mentioned again, only that now Basmas is not the daughter of, who was it before? The daughter of Elon. Now Basmas is the daughter of Yishmael. But before it was Machalas who was the daughter of Yishmael. So the names have somehow gotten confused. So now, this would be a lot easier if we put it up on the board. And that's what we're about to do. Okay, I'm going to ask, I don't want to take this up with me. Let me just do it. Let's see. Not tear pages here. Okay, one second. Okay, I'm going to ask you to read me off some of the names. Okay. Remove the obstacle course. Okay. Okay. Let's hope this works. And it does. Okay. There is a fissure. Oh, excellent. There we go. See that? Doesn't do a thing. Okay. That's going to take too long. Okay, forget it. So we have, let's start with, in order that it says it on page 132. We have who?
Yehudis.
Okay, I'm going to write it in English for everyone. No, it's the first word is Yehudis, right? Okay. Yehudis. And what is her father's name?
Be'eri.
Okay, it's going to be a little hard to write in English, but we'll try it.
They spelled it B-E-E-R-I.
B-E-E-R-I. Be'eri. Okay, we'll put a little apostrophe in there. Be'eri. Yehudis is the daughter of Be'eri. And the other one is?
Basmas.
Basmas. And her father name is Elon. Right?
Yes.
Elon. Okay. It's probably not the best spelling, but okay. And then we have Machalas. On page 142, Machalas. And she is the daughter of Yishmael. Okay? Fine and good. Now on page 192, we have a change. So let's read them in order.
Ada,
the daughter of?
Elon.
Okay, so now it's her name. She was the second wife originally, but now she's listed as the first wife. On page 132, when she's first mentioned, she's mentioned as the second wife, but here she's mentioned as the first wife, the daughter of Elon. And what is her name? Not Basmas, but?
Ada.
So her name is now Ada. We're going to put in parentheses, Ada. Okay. So Basmas has become Ada, the daughter of Elon. And what's the next one?
Ahalivama.
Okay.
Could these not be different people?
Ahalivama. There is someone who asks this question. Could they be different people? But it's unlikely because I'll show you in a minute why it's unlikely. Let's just get the names down first.
Now it says daughter of Ana, daughter of Zibion.
Okay, so the Ahalivama is no longer the daughter of Be'eri. She's now the daughter of?
Ana.
Anna and Sivan, right?
Yeah.
So Anna and Sivan. Anna.
Sivan is a place?
Nope, it's a person. Anna. I don't know how to spell that. And Sivan.
And there's a he leaf
that they have. I'll get that. Good, good, good. Good. Say it again, Ms. Winberg.
Is it one that's from the Hittites and
okay, so the name of the
from the Hittites.
The nation has changed. Mm-hmm. Where originally the first two were Hittim, right. And of course the last one is Ishmael, but now this one becomes a Hivi, not a Hitti, but a Hivi, different nation. I'll point that out. I'll show you in a different minute.
How do you know that Ahali Mama is Yehudah?
Okay, because it's the only one left.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah, okay. It's the only one left. Now, and Yishmael's daughter, Machalas, her name has been changed to?
Basmas.
To Basmas. Okay? Yes. To thoroughly confusing, because that was the name of Adah back in Parashas Toldos. Mm-hmm. So when Esav called his wives, did they get confused themselves?
No.
Right? The names are all confusing over here. Okay. So, let's see if we can do this. So, let's investigate who these people are. So the first question is, as was mentioned, how do we know they're the same women? Maybe they were different women. So, the way we know that is because the way the Torah says it is, again, 192, the way we know it is because it says, Esav lokach es nashav mibnos Kanan. Esav took his wives from Benos Kanan. That language sounds like we're referring to the wives that were mentioned before. He took his wives. Which wives? The ones that we've already been talking about. It's unlikely that that language would be used if it was not referring to the same women. If it were new women, it could have said, Esav lakach nashim. He took wives. Then we would imply possibly new wives. But from the fact that it doesn't do that, it's unlikely that these are new wives, especially since we know that Yishmael, that two of the fathers at least have the same name. That would be Elon and Yishmael. It's true that one of them has different names, but from the fact that the other two are the same, it would imply that this is the same wife.
He could have.
They said they had no scruples. He could have taken two sisters, but what happened to the other one? That's the issue. Here, we're going to go through the children of Esav. These are the only women mentioned. Now, it is possible that those women, the first women, didn't have any children, and now the other ones do. But again, from the language of the Torah that it says he took his wives, the implication is that these are the same wives that were mentioned before. And that's the way the commentaries approach this.
Are you referring to verse 4? Rather, verse 6? When he took his wives?
No, verse 2.
Verse 2.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you seen this?
Oh, do they have a chart?
Yeah.
Page 197.
If that helps at all.
No, let's see if it helps.
It doesn't. It's one name and then the other name in parentheses.
Okay, it has some of the names. If you can follow the chart, they have, on the left side of the chart, they have Yishmael and his daughter, Basmas, and parenthetically, Machalas. A little bit further towards the middle of the chart, they have Elon, and his daughter, Ada, who is also called Basmas. And then further on, they have, towards the right, they have Anna, and his daughter, Ahalivama, who is also Yehudis, or in English, Judith.
That seems to go from Sivan.
Right.
Which is why it says daughter of Anna, daughter of Sivan.
Right. Okay.
Are they both men?
They are both men.
Oh.
They are both men. Daughter of Anna, daughter of Sivan are both men. Okay, so let's see what we know and what we don't know over here. What is going on over here? Number one. Let's think about this. Daughter of Anna, daughter of Sivan. The problem is that here she's called the daughter of Anna, the daughter of Tzivon. Anna is Tzivon's son. Mm-hmm. That is stated explicitly later on. In on page 194 in verse 24.
Page what? I'm sorry.
On page 194, the next page, in verse 24. Ve'elav b'nei Tzivon. These are the children of Tzivon, the sons of Tzivon. Ve'aya va'ana. Aya and Ana. So Ana is the son of Tzivon. So Tzivon here is credited with the daughter of Ana. Anna's daughter is Ahalivama. So our sages explain, and Rashi tells us, that Tzivon lived with Ana's wife, with his daughter-in-law.
Okay.
And from there came Ahalivama. So Ahalivama was a mamzeres. She was an illegitimate child. She was born to her mother and her grandfather, Tzivon. Okay, we're going to see presently that both Ana and Tzivon were involved in many other illegitimate acts, as we'll see as we go along.
Rabbi Prensky,
yes, ma'am.
This could not be the Ana that's the brother of Tzivon. You see on the chart on page 197, there's another Ana who is the brother of Tzivon.
Right.
He shows no children.
Right. That's because. Okay. Let's let's point that out as well. Once we're on the subject.
It says the children of Ana in 25. It's Dishon and Ahalivama, yeah. Daughter of Ana.
Okay. Look on 194. Look on 194. Verse 20. Verse 20. Eilav and Seir Hachori. These are the sons of Seir. The Chori, that's his nation. Yoshvei Ha'aretz, those who dwell on the land. Lotan v'Shovol v'Tzivon v'Ana. He had four sons: Lotan, Shovol, Tzivon, and Ana. So Tzivon and Ana appear to be brothers. Yet later on, in verse 24, it says that the sons of Tzivon were Aya and Ana. So Ana here is listed as a son of Tzivon, not a brother of Tzivon.
It's two different people.
So the Mefarshim tell us they are not two different people. Rather, Tzivon lived with his own mother and produced Ana. So first Tzivon lives with his mother and has Ana. Ana gets married. Tzivon lives with Ana's wife and has Ahalivama. This is the confusion of Esav's family. Esav's family is so convoluted, you never know who's who, because they're constantly involved in illicit relationships. And therefore, the names are confusing, the fathers are confusing, we don't know who's who, what's what, who's related to who, who's a brother, who's a sister, who's a father, who's a mother, who's a daughter, who's a son, and things are all over the place. That's why we find the name switching, we find the father is not clear who's who. That's Esav. And the ultimate one we're going to show is going to be Amalek. And we'll show where he comes from. He's going to be...
Just like the Romans.
Edom is Rome. We're going to find that Amalek is illegitimacy on top of illegitimacy, as we will see in a moment. But let's bear with us over here as we go through the rest of this.
Watch the search.
Okay. We got it right here in front of us. We don't need to.
Oh, this is... It's all... Okay. So, Rashi tells us that the real names are here on 192. Her real name was Ahalivama. Her real name was Ada. Her real name was Basmas. These are the real names of the children, of his wives. These are the real names. The names in Parashas Toldos were changed to teach us something, or because of Esav's deliberately changing the names. Chazal tell us that the reason why Ahalivama on page 132 is not called Ahalivama, but rather she is called Yehudis, is because, remember, this is an illegitimate child, Ahalivama. That Esav named her, called her Yehudis, in order to make his marriage to her palatable to his parents, to Yitzchak. That they would never have agreed to him marrying this illegitimate woman, but he changed her name to make her appear more righteous. So he named her Yehudis. He called her Yehudis meaning Yehudis comes from the word, Yehudis starts with the name Ka, which is Hashem's name, and Das, which means law, the law of God. So this was a way of Esav pulling the wool over Yitzchak's eyes, or an attempt to. On the other hand, our sages tell us that the other wife, who is Ada, that he, there on page 132, she's called Basmas. Basmas means Bosem, which means incense or smoke that comes up. That's because these women were women who offered incense to Avodah Zarah, to idolatry. That's why on page 132, the next pasuk says that they were bitter of spirit to Yitzchak and to Rivka, and then if you recall, the next thing is that Yitzchak's eyes became dim, he wasn't able to see. One of the explanations was because of the ashan, because of the smoke of these women that were worshipping the Avodah Zarah, the idolatry. And so her name is called Basmas on page 132 to tell us who she really was. And Yitzchak, of course, realized it, that she was a really an Ovid Avodah Zarah. She was someone who was an idolater.
What was theory?
Okay, we'll get to the father in a minute. Hold on. One more name change for the women first. And that is that Yishmael's daughter, her real name is Basmas, but on page 142, she is called Machalas. We mentioned this when we got to her name the first time when we did it, in Parshas Toldos, because there is a Chazal that tell us that Machalas comes from the word Mechila, which means to forgive. Because when someone gets married, because they're starting a new chapter in their lives, then their sins, their previous sins, are forgiven. And it is what that means is that the capacity for change is very great when a person begins a new chapter in their life. And so her name is changed there to Machlas to teach us the lesson that even Yishmael's daughter, even the wife of Esav, gets a second chance when she gets married, because now it's a new chapter in her life and she can turn over a new leaf. She, of course, did not, but she could have at that point. Okay. Now, what about the fathers? So Elon's name remains the same, as does Yishmael, of course. But Ahalivama's father, who is either Anna or Tzivon, yet on page 132, the name is Be'eri. Plus, the nation changes from Chiti to Chivi. Here it indicates, again, some sort of licentious behavior. Chiti is one nation, Chivi is another nation. They are two of the seven nations that populate the land of Canaan before we enter it. There are seven nations. Canaani, Chiti, Chivi are two of them, Chiti and Chivi. It seems that there was also a crossover between the two of them. Somehow, Chiti and Chivi became confused, and the children, it was difficult to know who came from whom. Were they Chitim or were they Chivim? Because of what was happening with the illegitimate relationships, it was very difficult to tell. So on top of the fact that Ahalivama comes from an illicit relationship between her grandfather and her mother, there's also an issue of who was the ancestry of her family. Was it from the Chitim or the Chivim? The name Be'eri, I saw that the commentary struggled with exactly what does that name mean. Again, it seems to be something, it's telling us something with the name change, but I did not see offhand a reason why the name Be'eri is used on 132 instead of the name Anna or Tzivon.
How do you know again that, Yehudis was grandfather and...
Anna and Tzivon?
Yeah.
Ahalivama's father was either Anna or Tzivon, but it couldn't be both. It's one or the other. And Anna, later on, we see that Anna is listed as a brother of Tzivon and a son of Tzivon. So that's how we know that Tzivon lived with his mother to produce Anna. And here, that she's called the daughter of Anna, the daughter of Tzivon, is to tell us that Tzivon lived with Anna's wife to produce Ahalivama.
It's very possible that he just called his son like his brother.
Yeah, husband?
It's possible.
Since he didn't have kids, he thought maybe he's called his son, like his brother.
Again, because he didn't have kids?
Since Anna didn't have kids, so right. He thought to call his son Anna, so he'd be like, somehow continue. Like,
yeah, that's possible. That's possible that he would name his son for his brother. That is possible.
Yeah.
That is possible. We don't give Esav the benefit of the doubt. There's so much else that's going on over here. We don't give him the benefit of the doubt. Now, if we move on, I will show you a few more of these wonderful relationships. The children of Esav, starting with Pasuk Dalet.
Which page are we on?
We're on page 192.
Okay.
Verse 4. Vatelet Ada le'Esav is Eliphaz. Ada gives birth for Esav to Eliphaz. Eliphaz is the oldest son of Esav. Uvasmas Yalda es Ruel. And Vasmas gives birth to Ruel. Now Vasmas is Yishmael's daughter. We're going to see that the only line, there are three lines for Esav. There is Ada's children, there's Vasmas's children, and Ahlivama's children. The only line that we're not going to show an overt, illegitimate child is in the line of Basmas, who is Yishmael's daughter. That's the only one. So Esav marries Yishmael's daughter, and that line of Esav is, we'll call it the purest. It's the one that we're not going to see any overt, inappropriate relationships.
Yeah,
but in the other ones, we're going to show a couple. Yes?
This word Ruel is also a name for Yisro. There's no relation.
No, you're right. It is one of his names.
But it has no relation.
Not that I know of. None that I know of. It's a good point, though, that it is one of Yisro's names. That is correct. So, Basmas has Ruel. Ve'ahalivama gives birth to Es Yeush Ves Yalam Ves Korach. Yeush, Yalam, and Korach. It is striking the name Korach over here. We know Korach will be a famous or infamous person later on in Chumash. But that can't be the same person because this is Esav's line and Korach is one of Levi's descendants. Ela b'nei Esav asher yuldu lo b'eretz Kenan. These are the sons of Esav that were born to him in Eretz Kenan. This child, Korach, is listed here as one of Ahalivama's children. So she has three sons, Yeush, Yalam, and Korach. However, if you look on the next page on 194, it says in verse Tezvav 15, Ela alufei v'nei Esav. These are the princes. How do they translate it? Chiefs. Chiefs of the children of Esav. B'nei Eliphaz b'chor Esav. The sons of Eliphaz, the eldest of Esav. Who were they? Aluf Teman, Aluf Omar, Aluf Tsepho, Aluf Kenaz. He had the chief Teman and Omar and Tsepho and Kenaz. Aluf Korach. And one of the chief's name is Korach. Now, what is Korach doing in the children of Eliphaz? Korach was the son of Ahlivama. Eliphaz was the son of Basmas. Excuse me, of Ada. Therefore, our sages derive from here that Eliphaz, when he got older, lived with his father's wife, Ahlivama, and produced Korach. So, Eliphaz now gets involved in the licentious behavior and lives with his father's wife Ahalifama and produces Korach. So Korach is an illegitimate child as well. So far we have listed five sons of Esav, although one of them is really a grandson. We have Eliphaz, we have Reuel, and then we have Yeush, Yalam, and Korach. And now, again on page 192, Pasuk Vav, verse 6, Vayikach Esav es Nashav, ves Banav, ves Benosav, ves Kol Nafshos Beiso. Esav took his wives, his sons, his daughters, and all the souls of his household, ves Miknehu, ves Kol Behemto, and all of his cattle, and all of his animals, Ve'ez kol kinyano and all of his acquisitions, asher rakash be'eretz Kanaan, that he acquired in Eretz Kanaan. Vayelech el eretz, and he went to a land. He just traveled, he left. Mipnei Yaakov achiv, because of Yaakov his brother. Ki hayam rechusham rav mishevet yachdav, because there was their wealth was too great for them to dwell together. V'lo yachla eretz megurehem laseso sam, and the land of their sojourning could not carry them. Mipnei miknehem, because of their cattle. So Yaakov and Esav split up because there's not enough room for both of them. There ain't room for the both of us in this town. Right? That's what happened. And they split up and Esav left. What does this remind you of? When did two people, Avram and Lot, split up for the same reason? In that case, it was to Lot's detriment that he split up, that he left Avraham. Here, Esav leaves. And the question is, why did Esav leave? Why didn't he make Yaakov leave? Why would he leave? So, Rashi explains, the Mefarshim all say, that the reason is because Esav said that if Yaakov has the brachos, let Yaakov have all the curses as well. Remember that Avraham had already been told in the Bris Ben Abisarim, in the covenant with Hashem, that his children would be slaves in a land not their own. And which of course refers to Mitzrayim. So Esav said, if I'm not going to get Eretz Canaan, then I don't want to have the payment for it either. So he left. He said, let Yaakov have to deal with the good and with the bad. And so he checks out, and he goes where? Esav goes to the mountain of Seir. Esav hu Edom, Esav who is Edom. So he goes to Seir.
Why repeat that he is Edom?
Okay, why repeat that he is Edom? Very good, excellent. I want to show a couple more things and we'll come back to your question. Okay.
You know, Brother Prince, it's interesting. These relationships, it's not their illegitimacy, it's their forbiddenness. Mm-hmm. In other words, the Torah comments on that. It says that out of a mamzer is different than an illegitimate child. A mamzer is a product of forbiddenness.
Correct. You're correct. You're correct. It's more than illegitimate. Mm-hmm. That's correct. I think we all are.
Yeah.
But Esau isn't having an appropriate relationship.
Correct.
He's marrying people that are
correct. Correct. Now we know that Esau was not had no qualms about doing such things. Rashi tells us earlier that when Esau marries at age 40, why does he marry at age 40? We said this when we learned it. Esau is compared to a pig throughout Scripture. Esav is compared to a pig. A pig does not chew its cud, but it has split hooves. And when it sleeps, it puts out its hooves, as if to say, look at me, I'm kosher. That's what Esav did as well. Esav would try to project himself as being kosher when he really was not. For 40 years, Chazal tells us he was tzad nashim mitachas yad ba'alehem. He would hunt women from under the hand of their husbands. That's what Esav would do for 40 years. But he said when he turned 40, he said, my father, Yitzchak, married him when he was 40, so I'll also marry him when I'm 40. But Esav hid his tracks. So Esav didn't do anything overtly. And so Esav did not have any children, at least children that are listed, in that manner. But his children and his wives, they are not as good at covering up. And so in his lineage, we find all kinds of trouble. But you're correct. So let's move on a little bit over here. Pasuk Tes, verse 9. Ve'ela tolos Esav avi Edom v'har Seir. These are the generations of Esav, the father of Edom, in Har Seir. Ela shmos b'nei Esav. These are the names of the sons of Esav. Eliphaz ben Ada eshes Esav. So this is repeated. Eliphaz, the son of Ada, the wife of Esav. Reuel ben Basmas eshes Esav. And Reuel, the son of Basmas, the wife of Esav. Vayu b'nei Eliphaz. And who were the children of Eliphaz? Teman, Omar, Tzfo, Vigatam, Uknaz. He has five sons. Teman, Omar, Tzfo, Gatam, and Knaz. And I already showed you that later on, all of a sudden we find a sixth son, Korach, who was really Ahalivama's son because Eliphaz managed to live with his father's wife. And then we have one of the most important psukim in the Torah, but also the one that harbors the most pain for us Jews. Besimna haisa pilegesh Eliphaz ben Esav, and Timna was a concubine to Eliphaz, the son of Esav. Vatebem Eliphaz es Amalek. And she gives birth to Amalek. Ela b'nei Ada eshes Esav. These are the children of Ada, the wife of Esav. So who is this Pelegesh Timna, who has Eliphaz, has Amalek. And of course we know Amalek is the epitome of evil in this world. So where does that come from? Now, if we look a little bit later on, who is Timna?
Timna's a park in Israel.
Didn't Timna want to marry one of the Shvatim? Yeah. But
Timna is not a name that you would want to name a park. Not a park that you want to visit anyway. Look on page 194. We're on page 194. Look at Pasuk Chaf Beis, verse 22. These are the children of Seir. Vayu v'nei Lotan Chori v'Hemam. The children of Lotan were Chori and Hemam. Va'achos Lotan Timna. The sister of Lotan was Timna. So the sister of Lotan, these are the sons of, let me go back a little bit. Let's go back to Chaf, to 20. Eilev and Seir HaChori, these are the sons of Seir the Chori, Yoshvei HaAretz, those who dwelled in the land, Lotan v'Shaval v'Tzivon v'Ana. So we've already talked about Tzivon and Ana, but he has other sons, Lotan and Shaval, and then there's a few more, V'Dishon v'Etzer v'Dishon. Okay, those are the other sons of Seir. So one of Seir's sons is Lotan.
Who is Seir?
Seir is the man who lived, he's the one who lived in the land of Seir, which is where Esav migrates to.
Right, but is he related?
No.
He is before Esav.
Well, he's around, right. He's I don't know if he's a contemporary or before, but he's around the same time. Then, in Chaf Beis, talking about Lotan's children, Vayuvenei Lotan, Chori v'Hemam, he has sons named Chori and Hemam, V'achos Lotan, and the sister of Lotan is Timna. Now, this is a funny place to write the sister of Lotan. Why wasn't she listed back in verse 20 when all the sons of Seir are listed? So tell me that he also had a daughter named Timna. But it doesn't tell it to you that way. It just says the sister of Lotan was Timna.
From different wives.
Okay. Possibly from different wives. However, if...
Different father.
What's that?
Different father.
Okay.
It's not Seir that was her father.
Okay, perhaps a different father. So, the same mother and different fathers, right? That's what you would think, right? So, hold on. Seir's daughter, right? That's what you would think. However, hold on one second. I just got to find the right... Just find the pasuk. Hold on 1 minute over here. I'm sorry, I'm just missing one place we need to look. Oh, it's so much fun to go through these names. Okay, I'm sorry, it's not here. In Divrei Hayamim, in Chronicles, Timna.
Timna is mentioned as Malik's mother.
Here it's mentioned as Malik's mother, correct. But Timna in Divrei Hayamim in Chronicles is listed as one of Eliphaz's daughters. So, Rashi explains to us, Eliphaz committed adultery with Seir's wife, producing Timna. Timna grew up and then became the concubine of her father Eliphaz. And from that came Amalek. So Amalek, okay, here it happened. Amalek, you got to figure out who's his mother, who's his grandfather, right? It's a double iser. It's in adultery and incest. It's Seir's wife committed adultery with Eliphaz, has Timnah grows up, becomes Eliphaz's concubine, her very own father, and produces Amalek. But
no,
that is sick.
He went so bad. Maybe they didn't think it was bad because of Lot and his daughters.
What did you say?
Whatever reasons they thought. Yeah. Not, I mean, you know, but this is what happened. The nations of the world were all very careful about this sort of thing. Until Bilam, the nations of the world were not involved in this sort of stuff. Not overtly, anyway. They were very careful about it. Even the Egyptians were careful about it. Yeah. Yeah.
I just thought I was looking for Timnah on page 197.
Yeah.
This is the chief of
Timnah. It's because she also produced the chief.
All the other ones are men.
Yep. Yeah. Timnah had some standing, apparently. For whatever reason, she had some political standing.
What do we've expected more from Eliphaz? Because wasn't Eliphaz the son of Esau who grew up with in Yitzhak's household?
Yeah, but you see that the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, right? So this is what I'm showing you, that you have all these illicit relationships throughout Esau's family. Now Timnah, the Torah tells us that Timnah wanted. The Medrash says that Timnah very much wanted to marry into Abraham's family. Timnah, see, it's a little ironic, and it's a little it's actually somewhat sad. Timnah wanted a good thing. She wanted to marry into Abraham's family, but she couldn't marry into Abraham's family because she was a mamzeres. She was born from an adulterous relationship. So she tried her best, and the only way that she could join Abraham's family was to join Esau's family. But even within Esau's family, the best she could get was to be a pilegesh, to be a concubine. She couldn't even become a full wife. She became a concubine to Eliphaz, and from there came Amalek. One of my rabbeim once pointed out that the worst evil comes from the best intentions gone awry. Because when a person has a good intention, a person wants to do a good thing, there's something good to it. See, this is the second to last thought we're going to have tonight, because we have to cover Edom also, why Esav is called Edom, which was the question before. But let me just digress here for a quick moment. I know it's already 8:30, but we started a little bit late, if you don't mind. The rule is as follows. The world we live in, some things last a long time, some things don't last a long time. In order for something to last, it has to be connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to Ruchnius, to spirituality. Something which is bereft of spirituality of its own accord has to crumble, has to disintegrate. It can't have any keel. We, in our lifetime, as we do mitzvos and we study Torah, we connect with nitzchius, we connect with immortality, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with Hashem, which gives us the power to go on after death. That's only if we connect to Hashem, because Hashem is, of course, immortal. And by doing mitzvos and doing the right thing, we connect. That's true of everything. Everything has to have some good in it in order for it to last. The more good it has, the more it can last. Esav is the formidable foe that he is, because Esav comes from Avraham and Sarah and Yitzchak and Rivka. So four of the seven patriarchs and matriarchs produce Esav. So Esav has a lot of good in him, but he misuses it. But as a result, he lasts a very long time. And even though in the end he will meet his demise, but it's going to take it takes a long time before all that good is quote-unquote used up. Amalek, who's the worst of the worst, comes from someone who had a very good intention. Timna wanted the right thing, but she misused it, she misplaced it. And she was willing to go to Esav, to Eliphaz, even though that was the wrong place to go. Rather than accept the fact that she can't marry into Avram's family, she pushed further and managed to get in. But because her intentions were good, there is good that is there. And even though Amalek is the worst of the worst, the epitome of evil, but he lasts. And he lasts a long time. And that's why, although he himself will be destroyed, we will destroy him in the end, but he is a formidable enemy because of the good that is there. That is the understanding behind Amalek and Timna. We just have to cover one more point before we end. Why is Esav continually in these psukim called Edom? Why refer to him as Edom all this time? So, how did Esav get the name Edom?
Red.
He had red hair.
Reddish.
Okay, that's why he was called Esav.
Oh.
Right? That's why he's called Esav. Correct. That's why he's called Esav. But how did he get the name Edom? It's true he was red, but that's not when he was called Edom. Huh? When he sold the birthright. Why? The red soup. Because he sold the birthright for the soup. Because he wanted the soup so badly. So it says, he says to Yaakov, Halitaini na min ha'adom ha'adom hazeh. Give me this red, red thing. And then it says, Al-Kain kara shemo Edom. That's why he was called Edom. Esav is called Edom because that speaks of his incredible interest in the physical world, in materialism. Food. Give me that red stuff. So he's called Edom. Not because of his red hair, but because he just gave everything away for a bowl of soup. So here, when discussing Esav's lineage and showing all of the licentious behavior and just how they're all involved in this stuff, and there doesn't seem to be any purpose. It seems to all be about the here and now, the physical pleasures, instant gratification. Then he's referred to constantly as Esav. He's Edom. Don't forget who we're talking about. Edom. He's Edom. All his children are about Edom. It's all about instant gratification. It's all about the here and now. It's all about the physicality. It's all about what can I get right now. Give me that red stuff. So he's constantly referred to Esav, who Edom. Esav, the father of Edom. Esav, Edom. Don't forget that that's who it is. This is Edom. And this is when you get to his children, you see it in its worst way. I do want to make one last point before we break. I'm sorry, I know, again, I said it was the last thing. One more thing. If you look in Pasuk Chaf, Dalet 24, on page 194, where Tzivon and Ana are mentioned, remember Ana and Tzivon. Tzivon lived with his mother, producing Ana. Ve'elevenei Tzivon ve'ayava Ana. Hu Ana. This is the same Ana, asher matza as hayemim bamidbar, that he found the yemim in the desert, when he shepherded the donkeys for Tzivon, his father. What does that mean? What are these yemim? Yemim are mules. Ana is the one who discovered mules. Mules are a crossbreed. He took a horse and a donkey, crossbreeded them, which was something that people understood was not something you're supposed to do, and produced a mule. Ana himself came from a crossbreeding, so to speak, from licentious behavior, and he then took animals and did the same thing, creating mules. He is the one who first came across that idea of mules. So we're going to break here. Next time, we're not going to go through all these names. What we will do next time is begin on the next page on 196 with the kings of Esav, of Edom. Das means law. Yehudas and Yehuda are not the same name. Yehuda comes from the root Hoda, thank you, to thank Hashem. Yehudis comes from the law of Hashem. It's a different name. Yes.
Very tough question, and I hope you'll take it seriously. You're saying that when we connect spiritually, it produces long. It's what lasts.
Do I hear you moving things?
Huh? Or the Muslims, or whoever they are.
Oh, is that not supposed to say?
Are they getting that some kind of credit they're getting?
Seems that their prayer is legitimate. It seems their prayer is legitimate. If they're not worshiping idols, which it does not seem that they are, then it seems that if they're not worshiping idols, which it seems that they're not, then their prayer is legitimate.